Forex Fridays, only on Money FM 89.3.
And welcome back to Forex Fridays, ladies and gentlemen, on this Friday afternoon. And a lot to tackle in the start of the year of the Tiger. And while many were thinking about potential strength from the U.S. dollar, it seems that the greenback has whimpered at the start of the new Lunar New Year. In fact, it's been noted that the greenback has actually trended below key technicals at the start of this new period. What might be different for the U.S. dollar this time around? What will it mean for other major currencies, including that here in Singapore, especially coming off of that surprise off-cycle tightening move from the MAS? A lot to tackle as we head deeper into the Year of the Tiger. And today, to help us on Forex Fridays, we're joined by Mr. Vishnu Varathan, the head of economics and strategy at Mizuho Bank, to help us make a sense of all of these moves. Vishnu, thank you so much for joining us today. Glad to hear you and your loved ones are still safe and in good health during these times. And welcome back to the show, sir. I hope you've been well and you've had a good start to the new Lunar New Year.
Hi, JP. It's always a pleasure to be on. I've been well. Thank you for asking.
All right. And Vishnu, I do want to start off with the Fed's moves, which really have been the talk of markets for the first month of 2022. But at the start of the year, the Tiger, we've noted the greenback has fallen. And some have actually pointed out to me that it's started to trend below its 50-day moving average, one of those few key technicals that many strategists actually watch out for. Now, it behooves the expectations that perhaps a tighter move from the Fed would actually lead to a stronger greenback. What's different this time around for the U.S. dollar, despite this prospect of tighter Fed policy, sir?
I mean, that's a really good question, and I think markets have been grappling with that. Early on in the in the year, when the greenback was beginning to get knocked back, part of that had to do with U.S. inflation continuing to surprise the upside by quite a bit, and I think that brought about calculus around real interest rates, and so the sense that real returns into the U.S. interest rates will still be subdued by inflation meant that the dollar didn't have a unfettered path upwards. And I think what has happened since then is the Bank of England has gotten more hawkish, and just yesterday we also saw the ECB now no longer ruling out a rate hike this year, which means the narrative has changed dramatically from one of Fed and dollar exceptionalism to one of convergence, and that convergence in policy from between an increasingly hawkish Fed and now the ECB catching up means that the euro could find a lot more strength, and that's going to be a major impediment to one-way bets, upward bets on the dollar. And so, if anything, the dollar is going to find more headwinds and it's going to be more volatile in the FX markets.
All right. You know, Vishnu, we talk a lot about central bank policies here on Forex Fridays, but now I want to talk about fund flows relative to FX markets. How closely are you watching current fund flows? And for U.S. markets in particular, in the past, we've seen higher rate hikes, actually, or higher rate increases in the U.S., perhaps pull funds towards the U.S. because of these higher yields. But there are now some who think that there could be a prospect of outflows from U.S. equity markets that could also impact the greenback. Help us make sense of this and whether or not this is something that the Forex markets should take more seriously, or if it's something that perhaps isn't as important in the grand scheme of the U.S. dollar's outlook.
But I think it remains a very important component, although trying to extract directional views on currencies from that might be somewhat fraught. So you're mm-hmm. absolutely right with the Fed suggesting that they may indulge in quantitative tightening. That's the balance sheet runoff and hence draining liquidity. We've seen U.S. equities take quite a bit of knock. In fact, the Nasdaq is still in deep correction territory, and at one point was flirting with bear market territory, which means funds are beginning to look a bit more skittish around U.S. equities. And the double whammy here is that hawkish Fed means U.S. Treasury yields head up, which means U.S. bond prices are falling. So you also have funds coming out of that. These funds, of course, if they were to revert back to wherever they originated from, assuming they're not in the U.S., could at the margin, exert some downward pressure on the U.S. dollar. But because of the way things are hedged and in how dynamic the fund reallocations are, it may not be very easy to ascertain the exact impact on the dollar real time.
All right. Vishnu, I'm sure that you were looking more closely at all of these key central bank decisions over the last few weeks and to see whether or not they would move in lockstep with the Fed. I've noticed that there is a bit of a divergence between two groups. On one hand, you have the European central banks like the ECB and the Bank of England choosing to hint at perhaps tighter policy and looking a lot more hawkish. But you did see over the last couple of days that the Bank of Japan has indicated that they want to keep policy accommodative, and the Australian, the Royal Bank of the Reserve Bank of Australia, that is, also choosing to stay pat and looking a bit more dovish. Can you, when you saw all of this play out over the last 2 weeks, what are your impressions about this potential divergence in terms of how these central banks are reacting to the Fed?
I mean, that's a very good question, and I think we will do well to park the BOJ in a separate compartment, in fact, out of this ballpark. And I think that the BOJ is right in saying that in their case, their inflation risks are very different to that of the U.S., and they're nowhere near policy normalization. In fact, they're nowhere near revoking some of the quantitative easing tools or getting away from very low interest rates, although they might, entertain the notion of removing negative rates because negative rates has not worked for Japan. The RBA as well, I think they're looking at wage gains still being rather weak, so they're not afraid of inflation spirals per se, and they're more focused on growth recovering. Our bigger view is the BOJ is probably going to remain in the dovish camp, but the rest of the central banks are probably going to move towards normalization and some lift off in interest rates. Whether that happens in 2022 or 2023 remains the big question, and really the divide between divergence and convergence in terms of global policy. So I think by and large, we are looking for central bank convergence on policy by the time we get to the late part of this year. The BOJ, though, will remain the odd one out.
Timing always very key when looking at all these central bank movements. We're still speaking to Mr. Vishnu Varathan, the head of economics and strategy at Mizuho Bank, here on Forex Fridays. Now, Vishnu, I want to move towards Singapore's own monetary authority. Now, it's been over a week since the MAS surprised markets and enacted that off-cycle tightening move. Now, the big question now is that might the country's policy authorities be done with tightening markets, or could we see more action in April? Ultimately, also, what could this mean for the recently hot Singapore dollar?
Those are good questions, and we think that the April meeting is a live meeting for two reasons. One is that the MAS has said that they are responding to how inflation and growth are unfolding, and we know that the inflation story is one that has caught central banks out somewhat. And so the MAS did not see a point in waiting till April, and that's where the off-cycle move came about. But they have said they're moving in a calibrated way rather than brutally, which means if inflation trends do not subside, then there's every case to move again in April. And the other reason is we've also seen energy prices really escalating a lot more sharply amidst geopolitical risks, so on and so forth. And so there is a case at the margin for a more emphatic move via the midpoint being re-centered higher for the Sing dollar. So almost like a one-off move that also coincides with a clearer recovery from COVID. So certainly, April is live. What this means for the Sing dollar? Well, in terms of the moves so far, the calibrated increment to the trade-weighted Singapore dollar slope, it means very little for the Singapore dollar on a standalone basis because in the trading bands, the Singapore dollar is already at the high side of those bands, and the slope increment doesn't immediately create a lot of headroom. And so for now, nothing much is going to happen. But if a midpoint recentering higher comes about, that can immediately create a significant headroom for the Sing dollar, and the Sing dollar could strengthen. But the caveat here is it would strengthen against the trade-weighted basket. And that's to say it doesn't say anything specific about the Singapore dollar against the US dollar. At that point of time, the dollar trend, the US dollar trend, will be the one determining whether the Singapore dollar is stronger or weaker against the greenback. So that's something we need to be careful about, because especially now that the U.S. dollar trend appears a lot more volatile.
Mm-hmm. Vishnu, let's take a look at the week ahead. And another currency that's also said to be very closely linked with the Singapore dollar, or also influential in the Singapore dollar's trajectory, and that is on the Chinese yuan. As we know, markets on the mainland will resume trading next week and will be assessing just how much activity actually happened during the extended Lunar New Year holiday. Now, what is your outlook for the Chinese yuan as we head into more action, arguably next week, especially since the PBOC recently telegraphed a looser stance to help support the slowing economy out in the mainland?
We're going to say we're going to take a leaf out of Singapore's book on the renminbi. And we're going to say it's on a trade-weighted basis, we expect the renminbi to be mostly stable. We see some weakening bias setting in against the backdrop of more hawkish central banks elsewhere, be it the Fed or even the ECB at the margin, so on and so forth, but not by much. Stability will be the name of the game this year as the National Party Congress and a huge political transition takes place in China. And we see a stronger renminbi from where it is right now coming into effect maybe late 2022, 2023. And the elephant in the room is, why would that be the case if, in fact, the PBOC is on a dovish path, diametrically opposed to hawkish central banks, because the received wisdom is the dovish central bank often begets a weaker currency. In the renminbi's case, it's worth remembering that, fairly close capital account and PBOC's sway over the renminbi means that it's not going to move by as much on policy signals. More importantly, during this time, the current account surplus and the FX reserves being built up in China means that the renminbi is on a much more solid footing, particularly given that the inflation differentials between US and China favor a stronger renminbi. So these factors mean that the renminbi will not be whipped around and pushed down dramatically lower because of all these cushion factors and the policy intent to keep it basically stable on a trade-weighted basis.
All right, Vishnu. Now, we started out this interview, Vishnu, talking about the greenback's weakness at the start of the year, the tiger. And because of this, I want to talk about your outlook now on gold. With the greenback looking rather soft and inflation stickier than previously thought, could this be the year that the safe haven recovers and that the traditional inflation hedge starts to occupy its more traditional role?
I think there is a case for some recovery in gold whenever the dollar drops sharply, especially in a backdrop where we've got geopolitical risks, it's certainly always alluring and gold will have a little bit of a shine. But the warning against taking on gold aggressively as an inflation hedge is the fact that gold is not a unqualified inflation hedge. Gold is a hedge against debasement in currencies, which is to say when the dollar is weakening or there's a very effusive and supportive monetary policy. However, when interest rates start rising, particularly real interest rates, so that's to say now that we've got U.S. interest rates going higher, the moment U.S. inflation starts coming down, that will accentuate the up move in U.S. interest rates. And typically, when real interest rates move higher, gold tends to fall. So that's the warning here about gold. It is negatively correlated to rising real interest rates.
All right. A lot to watch out for with gold, and keep an eye out on those real interest rates when tracking the precious metal. Vishnu Varathan, Head of Economics and Strategy at Mizuho Bank, thank you so much for joining us today on Forex Fridays here on Money FM 89.3. Vishnu, as always, I wish you and your loved ones continued health and safety during these times, and we look forward to the next time you can join us at the show. Meanwhile, stay safe, and I hope you have a great weekend lined up, sir.
Thank you very much, John. It's always a pleasure.
Before acting on the information on Money FM, please consider if it's suitable for your own investment objectives, financial situation, and risk tolerance. To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download our audio app. That's AWEDIO. Available on Google Play or the App Store.